Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Voice of Christian Israel here on EuroFolkRadio.com. Still alive and kicking here at Eurofolk Radio after numerous attempts to deplatform us, interference with our radio shows, etc., etc. But we're fighting back. That's why I love this song. I have to be a warrior, a slave I cannot be. And this is all about how the Jewish race is trying to enslave the white race and to destroy the white race. My usual guest, Pastor David Martins of South Africa. How are you today? I know it's later in the day in your neck of the woods, at the very tip of South Africa, where you are coming into spring, actually into summer, where we are going into winter. And things are getting colder here. So how's the weather down there? Is it behaving normally?
Good evening, Pastor Eli, and also good evening to our listeners across the globe. Yes, I noticed the change in the starting time of our program this evening.
Right.
Of course, it being 7:30 in Cape Town at the moment. It is now, I would say, getting close to dark, and we have cloud cover over Cape Town. It's been on and off raining, which is somewhat abnormal for this time of the year. We normally get summer rains closer towards the end of the summer.
No, not but, the beginning. Okay.
But it's of course it's a wonderful help to get a bit of rain this time of the year, just to clean up the air and also to douse the dust off the plants.
All right.
Yes, a very, and very beautiful.
And to clean off the Africans, too.
All right. Well, Pastor, we've been having a lot of fires in the coastal area, the east coast area of South Africa, and there's thousands and thousands of hectares of woodland which has been devastated by fire. We had devastating fires last year in the same area, and houses were razed to the ground. And unfortunately, we've had the same situation at this time round. It's for the I think about the past week that we've had these raging fires. And also upcountry around the farmlands of the Free State, we've had devastating fires out there. People getting killed, and it is found that many of these fires are in fact being set by instigators to the land grab situation.
Well, that would seem to be a strategy, because the farmers are suing the government for the right to keep their land or to be properly compensated for it when it's taken away from them. So I could see the government setting fires for that reason.
Pastor, I don't think they like to propagate that, but obviously with the land-grabbing policies which are being put into place, and of course they are fathoming the waters in that, because on the one day they say it's going to happen, or that it is already busy happening, and the next day when Donald Trump sends a tweet, they rapidly change their attitude, but they still do the same thing. The land grabbing is a reality. At the moment, about 2 weeks ago, the government notified, they had it on the news that they appointed 600 individuals who are actually going from farm to farm to set up an inventory for each farm in terms of the total number of cattle, the number of tractors, the number of residences on the farm, etc. So it is, of course, a preempt to to the land grabbing, because it has, they've made it an offense. If you forget anything, if you're a farmer and you forget to add anything to that list which you have on that farm, and you don't add it to that list, it's an offense which is punishable by imprisonment. So
right.
I can see a lot of agitation amongst the Boers by that very act of the government, because we're living in a time when you don't want anybody to know you have three, what we call buckets,
yes.
You call them trucks. Or,
right.
Purely because of the fact that this information is seeped through to terrorist gangs, and they come and they collect the keys for three trucks.
Right.
It's as simple as that. I mean, they have done it on numerous occasions where people have registered firearms and with the police. And when they get home, they find themselves within hours up in a holdup with those exact weapons that they have made known to the police and that they have registered with the police.
Yeah.
Are now being sought by these terrorist gangs. So there's seepage of information from the police, of course, to these terrorist gangs.
Yes. Yeah, and many of the police may actually be the same terrorists at night, right? Police officers by day.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Terrorists by night.
Yeah.
Well, it just shows that you're not safe in any country that is run by blacks. They simply have no sympathy or compassion for any, well, actually, they have very little for each other blacks, but especially for whites. They have none whatsoever, okay? So, but here, I want to today talk about, again, the hypocrisy of the international press and how it's treating the white genocide problem, usually with silence. Usually with silence. And about a month ago, I did a show when I was unable to get a hold of you about the duplicity of the international press, either denying that white genocide is taking place altogether or that it's exaggerated, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Well, here now in Australia, this is from a website called theconversation.com, and I'll put the link in the chat room momentarily. I just want to read the title real quick. Again, this is from The Conversation. The headline is, Peter Dutton's Fast Track for White South African Farmers is a throwback to a long racist history. Peter Dutton is apparently the new prime minister, Home Affairs Minister for Australia. And he dared to express sympathy for the white farmers and their need to get away from these marauding blacks, okay? Yeah. So here they're mocking his attempt to help these white farmers in escaping this. What do you make of this attitude in this headline here?
Pastor, that is an attitude which is accommodated or rather nourished by many other politicians, especially when they when they get to know the details of what is happening in South Africa, they side with white minority predicament, and they actually give moral or even visual support. Of course, they're not in a position to give physical support in the
right.
in the sense of financial support, but they realize that they are themselves to become victims in the future, because South Africa is now the focal point of white genocide, and it's going to spread across the globe like it has already began to spread into Sweden, Germany, and other European, France, Britain, etc. In fact, I think Britain is very rapidly becoming an Islamite or Islamic nation or Islamic state.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that is part of the agenda, the global agenda. The globalist agenda is to eradicate the image of the white man. In Cape Town, for example, in Cape Town, it is wherever you go in the Cape Town or the Cape Town the whole of the Western Cape, if you any governmental or official business that you have to do, you don't see white people behind the counter anymore. You don't see people behind the till at the shops. Mm-hmm. It is all colored people, either blacks or coloreds. Right. They are no more. Whites are no longer visible in terms of the economy. They are no longer, except where they are. In the background, in very high positions.
Right.
And of course, those are only held by Freemasons. Yeah.
Well, it was already that way, and I could see it was changing in that direction when I was there in 2014, that I went to an Apple store to get parts for my laptop, okay?
Yeah.
And all of the retail of people, you know, the clerks and the people stocking the shelves were all black. But when I had a problem that the black clerk could not solve, out came a white supervisor, right? Yeah. And he was able to identify the problem and the parts that I needed, okay? So, yeah, but the face of South Africa is becoming very, very black, and white people are being disenfranchised consistently, with the exception of course, the Freemasons.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Well, Pastor, they had more than 80 years in which they could position themselves, get their upholstery nice and leathered, and, of course, position themselves in a position where they cannot be ousted because of the way in which they have positioned themselves.
Right.
Being the owners of very large corporations. They call themselves Super Afrikaners.
Hmm. Okay.
They,
Super
they,
Masons.
But they Edomites.
Right, yeah, Super
Of course, the Edomites, the Afrikaner heritage is Edomites, Kazarians, and Ashkenazis. And that we've seen in so many instances. In fact, if you scrutinize the personality of a typical Cape Dutch Afrikaner, you will find it exactly fits the profile. Well, they say you shouldn't do profiling, but if you do the profiling on a typical Cape Dutch Afrikaner, you will see that it fits perfectly into the Edomite image.
Yes, yes.
And well, of course, top Afrikaner top Afrikaners here in the Cape, for example. The one's daughter married a Rothschild, so
I married a Rothschild. That would make a good movie. All right, so let's see what now. This article is by John Piccini, PICCINI, apparently part of the University of Queensland, which gives us an idea of the academic disinterest in the plight of the Boer people. He says, Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton's recent statements that Australia should open its arms to white farmers in South Africa facing persecution, and he puts persecution in quotations as if it's not really persecution, at the hands of a black majority government sparked national bemusement, international outrage, and rejection from members of his own government. Okay, here is the great double standard of the international press, and we know who controls them, that if they can't deny that something is happening, which they do deny that the white genocide in South Africa is actually happening, they will mock it. And that's what Mr. Piccini is doing. He is mocking.
But I can see a number of gross what would one say
errors in reporting.
Errors, yes.
Jew speak.
Down further, he says Australians and Boers And then he has in brackets South Africans of Dutch descent, also known as Afrikaners.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which
yeah.
is a total deception because the Boers are primarily of German and Prussian descent.
Right, right.
So the reason why a great number of them were on their arrival in the at the Cape of Good Hope way back in the 1600s and 1700s, the reason why they were marked as being Dutch is purely because they transited through Holland,
mm-hmm.
and it does not mean to say that they were of Dutch descent. It's purely a matter of they were transiting mm-hmm. through Holland, and when they arrived, many of them, depending on who marked their or registered their arrival in the Cape of Good Hope, marked them purely as, if you would, for example, transit on a flight via London, and by the same principle, if you transited via London to South Africa, and on your entry, they merely marked that you were coming from London, so you're in
Or British. From Holland, yeah, right, yeah. they arrived on Dutch and British ships, or in the early days it was Dutch ships, and so they're automatically considered
right.
Dutch, right. He continues, yeah. Dutton's sympathy for white South Africans who would, quote, abide by our laws, integrate into our society, work hard, and not lead a life on welfare, unquote, has long historical roots, okay? But this is a mocking tone, as if abiding by laws, integrating into society, and working hard and not being on the welfare dole would somehow be not a good thing. What's John Pacini trying to say here? Okay, let's continue with the next sentence. This sense of mutual racial purpose in white men's countries like Australia, South Africa, and North America is located in a shared fondness for racial exclusion and segregation. Okay, the fact that we like to work hard, the fact that we obey the laws, the fact that we do not go on welfare is racism. All by itself.
Absolutely.
That's what he's saying. All by themselves, yeah. These qualities are racism.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. So we can't win for losing. Even our best efforts, which are produced by hard work, are racism, according to this line of argument.
Mm.
Okay? This is what this guy, John Pacini, I don't know, he might be one of those, what's that island south of Italy? Sicilians, right? Edomite Sicilians. All right. Proposed South African legislation that would allow the ruling African National Congress to expropriate land from white farmers, and it's related to this expropriation that we've been talking about for the last few weeks, without compensation, to meet a modest target of 30% of farmland in black hands, seems to have sparked Dutton's benevolence. Well, first of all, he seems to not have no sympathy for the fact that these white farmers are being, you know, their land is being stolen from them without compensation, and he has no sympathy for that. You know, like, who's going to feed the black Africans when this happens?
Pastor, you would most probably, if you go into this man's history and his historical roots, you will most probably find that he is also an Edomite.
Also an Edomite, yeah, exactly, Sicilian. David James and I have covered that aspect of southern Italy, and of course, it really wasn't a part of Italy, you know, for a long time until, of course, the Roman expansion absorbed.
Sicilian or reptilian, did you say?
Yeah, right, exactly. two words for Edomites, okay.
Yeah.
So Australia's far right. Okay, so immediately he is identifying sympathy for oppressed white people as something which is far right. And yes.
Pastor?
Yeah, go ahead.
You must just remember that you're now busy profiling.
All right.
Profiling is not permitted in this mm-hmm. democratic concept of life.
Well, I'm going to get on a flight to Australia, find Mr. Pacini and profile him really good. Okay.
But you see, they allowed to profile
us. But,
the moment the moment that you don't agree with the Democrat, with the emphasis on the rat, if you don't agree with a Democrat, you will find yourself being profiled, because that is what they do. It is like they have the copyright or the trademark to profiling. The moment that you do the profiling of an Edomite or a Jew, you find yourself in hot water.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Or for that matter, a black man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't do that. Shouldn't do that. You can't speak the truth about non-whites without getting raked over the coals in the globalist academic media, which is, of course, the same as saying Jewish media. White men's countries, he says. Australia's colonial immigration restriction regimes. Okay, so any government that had a pro-white immigration law in Australia is now a regime, which originated during the 1850s gold rushes in Victoria, heavily influenced similar policy. Well, he says polices, it should be policies, introduced in Natal, South Africa, in 1896. Well, I would say that I think you have covered the actual influx of, you know, Jews, Brits, Indians, Chinese, etc., into South Africa. Yeah. And that was all choreographed by the Freemasons and the International Jew. Yeah. Right? Wouldn't that be? Go ahead.
What one must also remember is that in 1896, Natal in South Africa that he refers to was totally under the control of the British. It was a British outpost. In fact, they still call Durban the last British outpost.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So.
Yeah.
What he's actually doing there is he is laying charge of this before the British door.
Mm-hmm. Well, apparently so, because Australia is still a British province, right? Let's continue. Yeah. And when Australia federalized colonial immigration laws in 1902, the notorious dictation test, which quizzed potential immigrants in any European language, was in turn borrowed from Natal. Well, that's very interesting. Well, because you have in Natal, you had Afrikaans and you had English. Right, so
at that time, Natal was greatly English. In fact, if you can recall that after the Boers had the Boers never annexed, but they actually proclaimed the Republic of Port Natal.
Okay,
but they were ousted from Natal. In fact, my great-grandfather, Andries Pretorius, was the leader of that group that annexed set up the Republic of Port Natal. But they were overrun by the British, and they withdrew, and they then went into the Transvaal. They inhabited the Transvaal. In fact, he became one of the presidents of the Transvaal Republic. But the Boers withdrew way back already before the establishment of the Sand River Convention in 1853. So it was annexed by the British way back, I think, in about 1842, 1843, British annexed Natal.
Okay.
So it was Natal was a province of annexed state of Britain.
Yes. Okay, so the difference here is that Australia has always been a British province, okay? Yeah. Whereas the Orange Free State and the Transvaal and Natal, being Boer republics, were annexed totally against the will of the people. Okay, there's a major difference for you. A completely major difference. Okay. He continues, Australians or Boers and Boers, which he falsely here cites as being of Dutch descent, forged a sort of racial fraternity across the battlefield in the Boer War between 1899 and 1902. Australian light horsemen sent to fight in South Africa against the Boers, by the way, found themselves not at all dissimilar to their enemy. He quotes the letter of an Australian soldier, J.H.M. Abbott, and he says this, the Australian bushmen, I think he's referring to white farmers, right? And not to the bushmen of the Negroid bushmen of Australia. The dweller in the country as opposed to the town-abiding folk is to all practical purposes of the same kind as the Boer. In training, in conditions of living, in environment, and to some extent in ancestry, to some extent, the Australian and the Boer have very much that is in common. He really couldn't say that if he were talking about the Aboriginal bushmen. Okay, so he's obviously talking about white farmers in Australia. Well, to the extent that the Australians are primarily British, they're still Israelites, and the Boers are primarily Germans, what makes them Ferez Judah, whereas the British are Zera Judah. And, of course, there's a lot of admixture of Ferez Judah into the British through the Anglo-Saxons. Okay, so they've totally mixed back together. They are, but to all extent and purposes, the same people. Right?
Yeah. Pastor, something else that must also be remembered was that in 1820, the British settlers settled in Natal, the Eastern Cape. So there were quite a number of British settlers. Something that I, just as a matter of interest, something that I stumbled across just yesterday, is that on my father's side, my father's mother's side, she was Liversedge. Her ancestors came from Britain of the 1820 settlers. And the Liversedge, the what do you call them, the roots father of the Liversedges was my also one of my ancestors.
Okay.
Which is quite interesting. I just stumbled across that yesterday.
All right. Okay. So, is that British or German?
That's British.
Okay.
My late dad's mother was a Liversedge, but also Israelite.
Okay. Yeah, so probably your blood contains Zera Judah and Ferez Judah as a result. Okay. That's probably your ancestry. Okay. So he continues, such sympathy and a hatred for black South Africans, which I think is an overstatement. You know, I think the Boer people had to deal, and even the white governments of South Africa did the absolute best they could with blacks and treated them as well as possible to the extent of giving them welfare, building them schools, building them hospitals, building homes for those who were working. I mean, you cannot describe that as hatred for black South Africans. This is a totally false generalization. Continuing, mirroring sentiments toward indigenous Australians extended well into the 20th century. Some of the 5,000 Australians living in Johannesburg in the 1900s, either war veterans or economic migrants, were instrumental in forming white-only trade unions modeled on those back home. Well, again, who's to say that, you know, who is somebody telling the blacks they must integrate? Is somebody telling the Chinese they must integrate? Is this Mr. Pacini telling the Jews they must integrate? Okay, whites must integrate, according to this liberal dialectic, or it's actually a monologue. It's not a dialectic. Go ahead.
One must remember that there were very few blacks within the borders of the Boer republics of the Transvaal and Free State.
Okay.
Throughout the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
It was only after the discovery of gold and diamonds.
Right.
And the Jews that managed to by devious means obtain the mining rights to those sources of wealth.
Okay, that's a very important. That's a very important. Sorry to interrupt you. That's a very important point. That first of all, how did the Boer people treat those few blacks that lived within their countries? They weren't slaves, were they?
Pastor, the story goes around, and this has been propagated by the Cape Dutch Afrikaner Freemasons, and that had also been one of their numerous deceptions that they propagated about the Boers as an instigator and enticer to the Anglo-Boer Wars. And this already emanated from the Cape throughout the globe, across to Australia and across to Britain, and even so marked up and written in the British Parliament Hansard the Boers undertook the Great Trek because they refused to release their slaves, which is an absolute lie.
Right.
It's an absolute lie, Pastor. The fact is that because of the good relations that were existing between the Boers and their slaves, there were two factors. One of the factors was that the slaves under the Boers had a better life than they would have had they not been slaves. That's the first thing. They insisted to go on to the Great Trek. Now, not all the Boers had slaves. The number of slaves were few and far between.
Yeah. And weren't they voluntary? Weren't those blacks actually volunteered their services to their so-called Boer owners? They were actually more employees than they were slaves.
Yes. Okay. Then there's a second thing. After the abolishment of the slave trade, the thing about what the proclamation was that the Boers that had slaves also had to release their slaves and then apply and collect their money, their reimbursement by the British government. They had to go and collect their money in person in London.
Right.
And that. Now, what happened was many of the Boers released their slaves against a notice that Cape Dutch Afrikaners would actually collect the money from. They would go to London and collect the money from the British government as so-called attorneys of law.
Right.
And then they would remain in Britain or they would go to Europe. They wouldn't.
Go on vacation.
But they wouldn't bring them. They wouldn't refund the Boers.
Absconding. Right. That's called absconding. Now, right. Mm-hmm.
Now,
yes.
One of the books that I browsed through very briefly, unfortunately, I didn't make a note of what this book's name was a book written by an administrative clerk of Britain, of the British government, that came to South Africa to do an in-field or on-field investigation into this. And he actually noted that amongst the Boers, there were hardly any people of color.
Okay.
Because there were blacks that were in employ of the Boers, whether it be by slavery or by whatever, but that the conditions that these people that worked under the Boers, there was not one incident of unhappiness. Whilst it was the same could not be said about the Cape Dutch or those blacks that worked and or people of color that worked for people in the Cape, whether they be Cape Dutch or whether they be British. And he made a note of it. He said that there was a great degree of unhappiness amongst the blacks that worked for the Cape Dutch and for the British in the Cape.
Right.
But amongst the Boers, this was not evident. There was no industrial strife.
Okay.
No.
Yes.
Evils of this kind.
Yeah, this goes to accentuate what we have been telling people here on these broadcasts that the Cape Dutch and the Afrikaner, so-called, deliberately fudged the distinction between the Boers and the Afrikaners, and ultimately placed the blame for everything on the Boer people when it should be the reverse. Okay, so this guy, this author here, is throwing more dirt on the Boer people and confusing issues that should be kept separate. You know, you have to have a discerning mind to understand the nature of this author's deception. It's pretty obvious that he knows he's lying, but that's his job. You know, next heading here: protecting the home front. Australia and South African governments worked together in the 1940s to ensure their restrictive racial policies were beyond the reach of new international organizations. Well, now that's very interesting. What organizations is he talking about? And should Australians, Boers, and Americans adhere to the policies of their representatives, or should they adhere to the policies of international bankers? Okay. Let me repeat now the next sentence. Jan Smuts, South Africa's prime minister between 1939 and 1948, was responsible for the inclusion of the term basic human rights in the preamble to the UN Charter. Okay, so as you have pointed out, Jan Smuts is a traitor to the people, the white people of South Africa, and so his allegiance to the Rothschild sponsor group, secret society. I can't remember the name of the secret society that operated with Rothschild financing. Over to you.
Pastor, yes, Jan Smuts, he was a Cape Dutch Afrikaner. He was never a Boer. He was part of the conspiracy that...
The round table is what I was referring to. The round table. Go ahead.
He was a Trojan horse that was planted within the Boers, within the Boer Republic of Transvaal. As in fact, he was part of the conspiracy. He was a Trojan horse. He then went and settled in Pretoria, and he was Sammy Marks, the Jew industrialist who became very rich in his relationship with President Paul Kruger. Sammy Marks then recommended Jan Smuts. Now, Sammy Marks was a Jewish Freemason. And being a Freemason, of course, being part of this conspiracy against the Boers, knew that Jan Smuts was a very intelligent man. Mm-hmm. And he was the perfect man to fit the picture of the Trojan horse, whereby the Boers could be divided.
Right. And... Mm-hmm. Like Ted Kennedy.
Most probably. Uh-huh. Then Jan Smuts was the one that formulated or wrote the words of the what they called the ultimatum. While he was still a Freemason, while he was still visiting Freemason societies that had been set up in the Transvaal. And in fact, I read quite a few interesting things about the establishment of the Freemasonry lodges in the Boer Republics of the Transvaal and Free State.
Okay.
How it was conspired even to do that. Of course, the first thing you want to do is to set up an advanced spy and surveillance lookout point. When you want to invade a place, you have a... And this, of course, the Freemasonry is a so-called organization, or is an organization that is also used as a spy center for spy intelligence.
Right, exactly. Yes. No, it's a glee club for compassionate white men, right? But they do have their black version. I think they call those the Blue Lodges, if I'm not mistaken. But
In South Africa, the Freemason lodges were open to the blacks, I think, in the 1960s, 1970s, because just about all the black leaders of the black organizations, while they were banned and in prison. Mm-hmm. They became Freemasons. That was the only criteria for their release and the unbanning. So all of them became Freemasons except Chris Harney. Of course, he was murdered.
Okay.
He never became Freemason.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, in other words, the recruiting offices for the Freemasons were the prisons. They could guarantee that they would get criminal minds working for them. Right?
Yeah.
That's what the Freemasons were looking for. Okay. So, contrary to the picture painted by this John Piccini character, the reality is quite more sinister. And the sinister agenda is totally covered up by this type of journalism. Okay. So, he speaks. So he wrote the quote-unquote basic human rights preamble to the UN Charter. Well, this proves that John Smuts is an internationalist through and through, working for the Rothschilds. Yeah. Okay, so there's no doubt about that. Along with Doc Evatt, E-V-A-T-T, Australia's Attorney General and the key author of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Smuts saw the idea of human rights not as, quote, synonymous with political, social, or racial equality, unquote, but as a protection of countries from the threat of further war and international encroachment. Vague language, to be sure. Vague language. Yeah. Well, the entire UN is set up as claiming that it's a peace organization, that through the UN, wars will never happen again, but we've had nothing but nonstop wars ever since. This is the UN was created, okay? So you can't believe that nonsense. Continuing, the prominence of domestic jurisdiction became a central part of the UN Charter. Well, actually, that Wilson's 14 points for the Treaty of Versailles, you know, was plainly stated but totally ignored, right? Yeah. Okay, same with the UN. They promise, they promise ethnic self-determination except for whites.
Yeah, all right. Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. This ensured human rights were not enforceable on or even relevant to individual countries. Well, that's his conclusion. To me, the vague language, lawyers like vague language because that means they can take it in any direction they want, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it seems to me that he's saying, well, sovereign nationhood is not a good idea, okay? Well, what about the American Indians on their reservations? They don't mix with other Indians. They prefer to cohabit with their own people.
Exactly.
Okay? And even the Zulu, although I hear that, because we did a show a couple of months back where the Xhosa tribe, well, and other tribes as well, were having a resurgence in their tribal identity, and that
identity,
and so that is actually a good sign. And one of those tribes actually supported Boer independence, right? Which is extremely unusual. But apparently, what's happening now is the image of the beast, namely television, is now liberalizing these formerly conservative Zulu who'd had a strong ethnic identity, and they're becoming what? Liberals? What are the Zulu becoming on the basis of watching more and more television?
Yes, Pastor. They perceive it to be the beneficial to them to have access to more westernized, although they don't like to admit it, but a more westernized way of life.
Uh-huh.
And,
okay.
So they, to a large degree, they are denouncing the
younger blacks'
inheritance as Zulus.
Uh-huh. But, really?
There's still a very strong, tribal identity amongst the older Zulus, and of course a great degree of mutual respect between the older Zulus, the tribal leaders, and I'm not excluding, for example, King Goodwill Zwelithini, the Zulu king. He has a great endearment with the, in particular with the Boers.
There's
been a lot of respect, mutual respect, and at one stage I was told that I was being invited to actually meet with the Zulu tribal leaders,
mm-hmm.
but at the time I could not pay homage to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely a possibility of the future.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting because we have the walkaway movement here in America. I don't know if it's branched out to other countries, but numerous blacks and Mexicans and others who are living in America have come out against the Democratic Party because the Democratic Party always fails to deliver the goods, right? And so they're seeing through these tactics of racial and all kinds of inclusiveness, but they exclude whites, right? unless you're a white liberal and willing to sacrifice your race for the cause of liberalism, you know, they don't want you. Okay, so what we're seeing is even blacks are now seeing through this, and former Democrats are seeing through these tactics, and so what we've got going is there's a great racial awakening happening all over the world to the politics of us against them, divisiveness, and that's always coming down from the international elite. I mean, you have to, if you don't see this, you're blind, okay? So, So he says, we have about 10 minutes left. Next heading, weathering decolonization. In the 1970s and 1980s, we saw increasing protests against apartheid in Australia, particularly around the Springbok rugby tours in 1971. This period was also marked by efforts from conservatives to blunt the edge of an international sanctions campaign against South Africa. Again, international. Who are these internationalists? Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like the word, this word international, you know, who are these people? What gives them any authority at all? You see, this is this. How should I put it? This invisible authority in the sky, in the nether sphere. It certainly is not God.
Yeah,
but it's the international Jew banker. Over to you.
It is not an acquired authority. It is a grabbed authority.
Right, earned. It's not an earned authority. Right.
Earned authority.
Yeah, it's confiscated. Absconded authority, right?
Absconded.
Yeah, right. They just took it and dared us to do something about it, okay? So, Coalition Prime Minister Malcolm Fraser and his Labour successor Bob Hawke were strong opponents of apartheid, but the coalition under John Howard in the 1980s joined with the U.S. President Ronald Reagan and U.K. Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher to do, quote, everything it could to see that nothing was done to bring apartheid to an end. Is this true? Because I know that under Reagan and under Thatcher, the CIA and MIA, and I forget what they call their Secret Service operation, MI5. M16. Yeah, right. MI5 and MI6, I think it is. That they were subverting the white republics of South Africa, you know, that's all they ever did, okay? So are Reagan and Thatcher simply mouthpieces to placate whites while they're actually, operating a subversive tactic here? What's your understanding of this period?
I would rather say not so much Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan had some degree of decency, but Jimmy Carter... Jimmy Carter was the big instigator to total obliteration of culture and society in South Africa under the white government. He was an absolute hater of can only be seen as
the white race in South Africa.
The white race.
Yeah.
And most probably also a Edomite as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that he's a Baptist, he was a Southern Baptist, but I mean, we know Judeo-Christian churches accommodate every race and creed that they deem to be necessary for their delusion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now here's an interesting statement here. The first arrival of what Dutton would now term refugees from Southern Africa to Australia, not RSA, but Southern Africa in general, to Australia began in the 1980s. White farmers fled the democratic election of a black majority government in Zimbabwe in 1980, followed in the 1990s by a rush of South Africans packing for Perth after Nelson Mandela's 1994 election and the abolition of apartheid. Well, we all know that after Rhodesia became Zimbabwe, life for whites in that country became very dangerous.
Yeah.
And they packed up and left, which caused a starvation in Rhodesia, now called Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And their prime minister actually begged white farmers to return so that they could grow food again, right? So, of course, this
and
author...
Pastor,
go ahead.
What preempted this Robert Mugabe's actions against the whites, that it was preempted,
yes,
by tribal warfare. There was Bishop Abel Mazarewa, which was a great opposer of Robert Mugabe.
Okay.
And I believe he was murdered, if I can recall. There were three tribes primarily that were in, of course, they were in opposition to become the government.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Mugabe, it merely meant that he was more greedy, and if I can recall, Robert Mugabe being a Matabele, and the Matabeles are more, I know the particular tribe that Robert Mugabe is from is more bloodthirsty. In other words, the most vicious survived, and the most vicious grabbed the power.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been something which has been evident in South Africa for the past many generations.
Hello. Sorry, you dropped out.
Vicious.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, Mugabe. Yeah, you dropped out for a few seconds there. But here, let me, with about 7 minutes left, 6 minutes left, he says, studies find these migrants felt victimized by the process of decolonization. Well, the process of decolonization, which included robbery, murder, beatings, etc., torture, which is the process of decolonization. He doesn't point that out, right? Versus bad, read black government. Well, that's what happens when you have black government. It turns vicious, absolutely vicious.
Yeah.
Australia, which is yet to reconcile itself with the legacy of colonialism or offer meaningful participation in government to indigenous people, must then appear to be an ideal destination. Well, the fact is, blacks can't govern. And when they're given power, they govern very badly. They govern like tyrants, as obviously. Now, of course, this guy doesn't quote the "kill the farmer, kill the boar" song, right? That the blacks, So obviously, this is nothing but a hit piece by a liberal, designed to promote multiculturalism, totally obscuring the true history of the Boer people and their lack of persecution of blacks. On the contrary, the Boer people have been persecuted by the Jews, Freemasons, and others during this whole time. Yeah, and now get the blame for not wanting to live under these conditions. Amazing. Back to you.
Yeah. Pastor, yes, right in the beginning, I actually mentioned the fact that does not draw distinction between the Boers and the Cape Dutch Afrikaners. The mere fact that he disrecognizes that distinction says that he's on the wrong track from the outset.
Mm-hmm.
You hear what I'm saying?
Sure.
In other words, if you look at, for example, if you look at the American politics, if you don't come to recognize the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans,
Republicans,
you're in the wrong track.
Except
if you take into recognition the Jew factor.
Right.
The Jew factor means that the Democrats are controlled by the Jews and the Republicans are controlled by the Jews, or rather the Republican Party. The Republicans or the Republican Party represents individuals who have some level of thought and distinction in that they draw they can draw conclusions based on facts, where the Democrats are basically a bunch of if one can say they are already zombified,
right?
Because they are
by television
mm-hmm. and by
mass media,
and the Rothschilds.
Exactly. Yes, an incredible. So what this guy is arguing for uncritically is what's happening to Australia today, namely Muslims raping, murdering Australians, and Buddhists, and Chinese Buddhists, and Arab Muslims, creating no-go zones for white Australians. This is what he's arguing for. This is the picture of racial segregation by those proclaiming racial integration.
Yeah.
The reality is the exact opposite of what he's arguing for. This is the rhetoric by which our young people have been brainwashed by liberal prostitutes. And it's actually very encouraging to me that Peter Dutton has actually gone on record for an Australian head of state to go on and say that white farmers are facing persecution. For somebody at this high level to use that kind of terminology is very refreshing, because it's the truth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you say Jewish prostitutes?
Right. Yes, I did.
It's a good one, Pastor.
Right. No, not prostitutes, prostitutes.
Prostitutes, yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what this guy is. Go ahead.
One that I should remember in my
absolutely
prostitutes.
Yeah, right, exactly, and that's basically all there is these days, except for independent media. So I have nothing but praise for Prime Minister, Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton, for actually acknowledging that the white farmers in South Africa are suffering persecution at the hands of a black majority government, because that is the absolute truth.
Yeah.
And more.
One could also call the, the black majority government in South Africa is nothing but the proxy agent of the Jews and Cape Dutch Afrikaners.
Right. Right.
Because behind the scenes, they are still in control. They're pulling the strings.
Yeah. So therefore, for all intents and purposes, the South African people are being controlled by the Cape Dutch, cocaine dealers. Not cocaine, opium dealers. And it hasn't changed. It hasn't changed since the Boer people and the Dutch East India Company set up shop in Cape Town.
Correct.
It's still running the show after all this time.
They're still running the show.
Yeah. And as they do here in America and in Britain and elsewhere around the world, it's Jew bankers that run everything. All right, folks, I'm afraid we've run out of time. Thanks for joining us today on Voice of Christian Israel. Thank you, Pastor Martins, for being with us again. And thank you. And we will all see you again next time. Praise Yahweh. Okay. All right. Are you still there? Okay, I guess not.
To be a warrior.